Today's program was brought to you by Union Beer. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
Hi, this is Celia Kutcher, host of Animal Instinct, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good evening and welcome to Fun About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. My name is Chris Kuzmi.
I'm Jeff Lord.
And I'm Dave Sharfstein.
And we're your hosts tonight on Fun About It. This is episode 127, I believe. My regular co-host and love of my life and fantastic tasty fermenter, Mary Izette, is actually off cheating on us with a different podcast tonight. She is the guest on Steal This Beer, which is run by our friends John Hall, Justin Kennedy, and Augie Carton. And if you go to stealthisbeer.com, you can find various episodes there, 15 episodes in currently as far as what they've published, but I know they have stuff in their archives. Episode 8 is particularly nice. Who's that guy? That's Chris Kuzmi. Oh, look at that.
I know that guy.
It's a great one. It's 8. Oh, I take that back. It's episode 9. It's a good one. I strongly recommend it. It's good. Sharing the podcast love. All these podcasts happen because of listeners like you. To that regard, you should donate to heritageradionetwork.org to keep this whole thing alive. Hey, all right. We do have our fun drives, but it's worth mentioning all year round. Because then we get people like Dave Sharfstein and Jeff Lord into the studio, which is very fun. First, I'm going to go to some announcements. Some things going on coming up. Mead Day is August 1st, and if you've never made a mead, and if you have made a mead, find friends to make mead with. It's super easy. It's super fun. And if you wanted to make mead now in time to share on Mead Day, you could make short mead. And that's a whole lot of fun. If you go to Mary's blog, mylifeoncraft.com, there's a bunch of short mead recipes in there. And we've talked about it on the show before, but we'd love to, have you guys make some of those and hear what you've done with them. Jeff, have you ever made a short mead?
I've never made a short mead, but I recently got this book, this really amazing book that has some really great short mead recipes.
How big is the type? Because I can't see very well.
Well, I mean, I'm pretty blind, but it works for me. And the pictures are really pretty, too.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Speed Brewing, I think it's called.
No
I'm not
way.
Really sure.
I think I have a copy or two later on my house.
But great recipes in there for short mead, for sure.
Totally great book. You get that. That's one of the reasons why Mary Izette is the guest on Augie's show. So she's talking all things speed brewing. And speaking of speed brewing, we recently had a really great event up in Croton Point Park, which is the closest park to New York City where you are legally allowed to drink outside. And so annually and for years, going back to like late 80s, I think, the New York City Home Brewers Guild has been having an annual picnic. I think we only started going to Croton Point Park about 10 years ago. But now we've opened it up to all the homebrew clubs under the blanket Brunity. And so we had a Brunity event. Just basically we threw 15 taps up of homebrew, and Mary had a bunch of speed brewing stuff. She had a SEMA on. We had some seltzer and some homemade sodas. I made a bunch of pickles that Mary wants me to talk about today. Like, she's, don't forget to talk about the pickles. I was very proud of the pickles, but I think I actually talked about the pickles last week about what we did. But they went over really well. Half sours, and just like a half gallon, or a quarter gallon of water, 2% brine, coriander, black pepper, and 2 days ferment, and so the cucumbers maintain their crisp consistency, which I love in a pickle.
Yeah,
I love a crispy
too.
Half sour pickle. Anyway, what I wanted to say with that also with this, we raised $1,800 through a raffle and through various generous donations from our members and from buying stuff for the Young Survivor Coalition, which is a group for young cancer survivors. And I know we've all been touched by people in our lives with that have been affected by that disease and that blows, and so these things are fun to do. Anyway, on happier notes, Jeff, you just came back from the National Homebrewers Conference, right?
Yes, I did. And a good time was had by all.
A good time was had by all.
It was. It was quite an amazing adventure.
Your last name you are aptly named Jeff Lord. for 2 years in a row, you have been Lord of the Cellar for the National Homebrewers Competition Northeast Regionals here that we held in New York. You are the Cellar Master. You are Lord of the Cellar.
It is a job that I love to do. It gives me a sense of purpose and also sort of a sense of, you know, mad power.
I see it in your eyes.
I control the beer. It's all mine. Mine. You can only have this bottle. No, I have last year at the National Homebrewers Competition, second round, I stewarded the Cellar Master
in second round. At
the competition.
What was that like? I've actually never judged or stewarded for it when you got to that point. Didn't you have national judges that you have?
We had three national ranked judges on our panel. And it was porters, and it was something to behold. The organization is flawless. Everything is where it needs to be. Serving, they move through those beers so quickly, but just listening to what they talk about and the flavors and the things that they describe, it's masters at work. I mean, it's really something to behold. And they got to go through a lot of beer, and they do it all very, very quickly, but also very rigorously. And I was amazed. It was two judging groups judging porters, and they were independently coming to a score, and without fail they were within 1 or 2 points of each other every single time. It was pretty amazing.
Did they do a calibration ale in the morning?
I did not see them do a calibration ale, so I don't know if they had done that before while we were getting our steward instructions. But we just went to the judging tables and just started serving homebrew. We were done in, we did the whole round in an hour and a half, I think.
Do you think doing that helped you prepare for it, doing it on the smaller-ish scale? But it's the same amount.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that stewarding is a very important thing, and it's one of the unsung heroes of competitions.
Absolutely.
And one of the reasons that I do it and I want to do it and I don't want to judge, as I think that, you know, everybody who comes through, not everybody, but a lot of people who come through as stewards are looking to become judges.
Yeah.
And so you lose a continuity of the best way to do things, your best practices, so to speak. And so I don't want to be a judge. I want to be a steward, and I want to be a perma steward is what I call myself.
Perma steward.
So that the next time we do the first round of the National Homebrew Competition, if I'm there,
would you rather be a steward or would you like to be cellar master?
I'll always be the cellar master.
You're lord of the cellar.
But I mean, so that I have.
But you
that.
Do the great steward talk. I mean, you were great for hooking up those stewards, because the communication between the cellar and the steward is
critical,
important.
Right? But I think it's that continuity of experience, and I think you guys had it right to put some of this down on paper and to sort of build a Bible of how to run a good competition. So I think that's really important, because people don't want to stick around to do I know that's really not fair, but people don't want to stick around to do the hard work. And, stewarding and cellar mastering and putting all those labels on and working on the computer, that's a lot of hard work. But if you don't do that, you don't have competition. So
that's true. And to that regard, I also want to send a big shout out and lots of love to Brooklyn Homebrew, one of our local homebrew stores, which they've decided to move on from having that store locally, so we'll be down to a couple of other stores. But we love you and thank you for the community, and that's where we did some of that background work, putting the labels on.
Yeah, I was just there on Saturday for a class, and it's just sad. I just love those guys. They're
family. They're amazing. But just the business of retail.
I'll
let them speak to it. We'll have them on soon, and we'll talk about kind of like the trials and tribulations of that.
But in the meantime...
What else did you learn at the National Homebrewers Conference?
Well, it was really...
And tell me about this bag that you brought me.
Okay, so this year, instead of stewarding for the competition, I decided to volunteer for the sessions to help out. So last year, I did the second round of the NHC. This year, I was pouring beer pretty much for three sessions. And one of the sessions that I poured for was... It was about an experimental hop that they released only to homebrewers. So this is a hop that they developed, that they basically planted 1 acre of, and it got so much, they liked it so much that they're going to eventually release it commercially, but in the meantime, they are packaging it and selling it for homebrew use only. And the panel was, Vinny Chalerzo was on it, and he was one of the first to brew a beer. It's called,
438?
HBC 438, but they call it Ron Mexico.
Ron Mexico? Yes.
And he brewed what he called a session IPA with it, and it was one of the three beers that we poured for that session, and it was just, it's a really interesting hop. It's very peachy, stone fruity, and it's huge alpha acid, and so I mean I'm not a hop guy, I don't even know what to do with that thing.
16.6
yeah, alpha so acids. And that was one of the sessions that I went to and actually stewarded. I did another one, speaking of meads, I did a mead panel. Michael Fairbrother was on it, and
we love Michael.
Ken Schramm was on it as well, and there were some other homebrewers, and they poured actually 5 different meads for everyone to taste.
If you're a member of the AHA, you can go to homebrewersassociation.org/AHA-mead-day and on in the bottom right corner, when it talks about Mead Day, it also has all the conference seminars on mead. This is members only content, but you can download these the exact seminars you're talking about.
The interesting thing about that, they had some ghost pepper meads, which you'd think would be terrible. Delicious, unbelievably good, mm-hmm. with that pepper right note right at the back. And the other really interesting one, what?
It's really neat to see, you know, the cycle of stuff and how we all influence each other. Michael Fairbrother judged Bob Slanzi's ghost pepper mead at Homebrew Alley a couple years back, and he was like, "Oh my god, I gotta make this!"
And it was really good.
And to that regard, too, I wanted to say it because it's Bob Slanzi did a collaboration with Mellovino, and they're calling it Mellow Evil.
Oh, I saw that label.
And so this weekend, the 18th in New Jersey, Mellovino is releasing their collaboration, the Ghost Pepper Mead, and they're doing just a Pepper Meads kind of side project from out of Mellovino called Mellow Evil, all peppers.
Delicious. I was surprised because I thought it was going to be just like a throat scorcher, and that heat just hits you sort of at the back of your throat right after you drink mm-hmm. the delicious mead, and it just makes you want more, makes you thirsty. The other interesting mead, well, they had several, but the other one, I know in Grand Rapids, you and Mary had gone to the honey tasting mm-hmm. seminar.
Mm-hmm. With Ken Schramm?
Yeah, and yep. he had made a mead with using every variety of honey that you tasted at that
really?
Seminar.
Really?
Yeah.
He blended
it all together and made a mead out of it. And it was surprisingly good and very complex.
Dave and I, we are part of a group now called Wine for Beardos. And, you know, Mary and I hosted the one on Sancerre maybe a couple months back. And Sincere. Sincere. And we had a bunch extra, and so we put them all together in hopes of making a red wine vinegar.
Ooh.
It didn't take, though. We should have thrown a mother in there, but that would have been fun.
How do you fail at making vinegar?
I know, right? It was still tasty.
No, sour, darn you.
Do you think mead's coming up? I mean, I don't know, because we're in our own circles, and so, you know, mead is still just, I mean, my friends know about mead.
Right.
I forced them to.
Well, tell you, so Michael Fairbrother did, he served meads at 2 of the Brewing Network parties, the Brewing Network 9 and the Brewing Network 10 party. And at the Brewing Network 9 party, the mead that he served was the best thing I had at the entire event. It was.
Did you have the Braggot?
Yeah.
The Imperial Stout Braggot?
Yeah, he did. Awesome. He brought that back and this year as well. And it was.
Yeah, I'm excited to taste. I hope I'm able to taste his collaboration with Stone, which was an Imperial Stout Braggot.
Right. So I don't think they can sell that.
Well,
was the problem.
I'm going to call Michael. Say, can you send me a quote-unquote yeast sample?
Maybe they can, but I know that he was talking about in the seminar that there's some restrictions on collaborating between various and sundry alcohols that you can't sell in this country.
Back to the hop thing, I'm very excited. Dave and I are going out in September to Yakima Valley for Hop Union's Hop and Brew School, and I think there are still tickets left to that. To the homebrew side, it's pretty awesome to be there and get the relationship with the hops. I went last year on the homebrew side. It is almost time for a break, but I'm going to introduce what's going to happen after the break. Last summer, I had the sincere pleasure of hanging out with Michael Ferguson of BJ's Restaurant, and also known as Mufasa. You might know him from early days in the Brewing Network. He is also the host of Beer Geeks TV, which is in the middle of airing its second season. And he came and hung out with me at 508. We brewed a collaboration together, and they filmed me for 3 days going through various things, and it was a very stressful time having a camera in your face all the time. But now I think it'd be better prepared because I know what it is.
Kind of like having a microphone
great.
In your face.
Yeah, exactly. Welcome to radio, my friend. It was totally a lot of fun. He's pretty amazing, really inspiring. And the last day that he was with me, we went to Barcade, and we had a little kind of pop-up festival called Funky. It was Funky 10, which is a bring your own beer festival, but themed to American made Belgian style beers. And so we slung a bunch of beers, and we raised money for Bark, Animal Coalition, Bark Animal Shelter. And then when everything was said and done, I was wonderfully relieved. All the cameras were finally off. We were hanging. But, of course, Mary and I had been drinking a little bit. And we decided, hey, let's do a great interview with Michael Ferguson. And so after the break, we're going to listen to that very, very happy and slightly imbibed thing. And I think you'll enjoy it. Thank you, Michael Ferguson, for humoring us and being this. And thank you guys for joining us on Ferment About It.
Son acquired Union Beer Distributors, which was originally located on Union Avenue in Brooklyn, but has since expanded to its present location alongside the English Kills Canal in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Union Beer has grown dramatically in the last decade as the primary distributor of Anheuser-Busch products for Kings County, Brooklyn, through the hiring and development of the best people in the industry. In 2003, Union Beer acquired a powerful catalog of specialty brands, which immediately positioned them as the craft beer supplier to accounts in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, and Staten Island. Union perpetually tweaks their portfolio to maintain the highest level of stylistic breadth with the most coveted brands available. Through the highest possible level of service, outstanding salesmanship of the ultimate lineup of brands, and a paramount focus on education on all levels, Union Beer has solidified its position as the only source for the best selection of beers in the 14 counties of southeastern New York. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
This is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, and you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Welcome to
Ferment About It
on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Wow.
I'm Mary Isaac.
I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And we're with
Michael Ferguson.
Of Beer Geeks TV.
Of Beer Geeks TV, yes.
I had the sincere pleasure of spending the last 3 days with Michael Ferguson of Beer Geeks TV. They've finished their first season of Beer Geeks TV. We're on the second thing, soon to come, featuring 508.
Yeah.
But you know what? That has been all about, you know, my life. But Michael Ferguson, you are incredible. There's a reason you're the host of this show. A, you're fantastically awesome. You are fun. You are
He's
fun.
Only saying that because it's true.
You're charismatic.
Well-spoken.
You know, made for TV.
But not only that, one of the things that really impressed me in our 3 days was you know, when I am not always, ironically, being the host of this radio show, the most articulate person, but when things would go a certain way, you just dropped knowledge all over the place, which was awesome. You have a lot of experience in the beer industry. Where did you get your start, and how did this come about?
Chris, this is just another way of you telling me I'm old.
No.
But I am. I Dirt was my classmate. He was a year behind me, actually. But I got my start, you know, German-style brewing. My mentor was Dan Gordon of Gordon Biersch.
Okay. Awesome.
And he graduated with a doctorate from Weihenstephan. And I trained under him for 5 years, and I went to Siebel, the oldest American Institute of Brewing Studies, and did the short course because I had already, got the Dan Gordon thing.
Sure.
And then I did my apprenticeship at Vox & Brautechnik. in Ulm. And Jost Bachmann was a classmate of Dan Gordon's. So I had this big grounding in German-style stuff. The problem here is that I was a bit of a beer Nazi. I mean, okay. Really, truly.
What does that mean? Let's talk about beer Nazis.
Okay, let me describe my brewery. When you walked in my brewery, it was positive air pressure. Air went out, not in. You had to step in an iodine bath to come in. You couldn't wear open-toe shoes.
Yeah.
I put little booties on you that you tied at the thing, and I did not allow lactating women in the brewery. Okay?
They can't play djembe, right?
Yeah, exactly. So 8 years, and then I realized and I know Dan Gordon probably hates me for it, but then I realized that, you know, beer was like an environmental thing. It wasn't just Germany. You know, you ask a German, all right, what does it take to brew beer? They say it takes a scientist. You ask a Belgian person, a brewer, what does it take to make beer? And they say an artist.
Yeah.
And really what we do here in the United States, craft brewing, is a combination of art, craft, and science.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay? And that's why working with you from this community and you, Mary, was very nice because, you know, it takes us back to our roots. Yeah. It takes you back to what really started this craft brewing thing going on in the United States. You know, I mean, yeah, it was, you know, it was beer, and a lot of the guys that first started, they've become really big now. But, you know, they started out as home brewers, man. When Sierra Nevada started, he was using dairy equipment. He was basically brewing in a bathtub.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, Bill Owen.
Don't brew in a bathtub.
Don't brew in a bathtub.
Unless you're sanitary. If you can sanitize your bathroom, it's totally fine.
If you're making Belgian-style beers.
You can turn your bathtub into, like, a cool ship, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, after
as
all.
As long as you don't use a toilet in the same room.
After all. The guy at Rogue used his beard for yeast.
Oh, yeah, used his beard for yeast.
Yeah.
So you originally did an episode at
we did.
Rogue, right?
Yeah. Just, you know what? So there's so much great stuff going on in the industry right now. I'm in my happy place. It's super happy time for me. All right.
My happy place is cake cleaning.
Oh, dude. You know what? It pays to be in the industry as long as I have, because I don't have to do that stuff anymore.
Pay my white fence, accepting interns anytime, I say.
Indeed. You know what? That's the thing. You know, you'll get to a certain place. You're young. I got T-shirts your age, man. So you're gonna get to a point where you've got this like immense knowledge. You've got people following you. You've got a book out. You know, people are gonna be asking you for interviews. It's gonna be one of those things, and we're at the forefront of all this going on a second time.
Right.
Because the first time it was there, but then something happened. We stumbled. We didn't have the right stuff for the American people.
Yeah.
What do you think the stumble was?
Yeah,
what is the sustainability of where we're going?
We had to become humble and have some entry-level beers. People did not have entry-level beers. All right? So you had to have a Kolsch. You had to have a cream ale. You had to do these things where people could come in and say, well, I'm not a craft beer drinker, so what can I drink that you make?
Yeah.
Right.
Right? Yeah. The, you know, A1 sauce hot pepper chili beer was not the beer for them. Right? What they wanted was a beer that tastes like something that could give them the bridge from, you know, American quote-unquote pilsners to craft beer. And that was the mistake we made in the 90s. Plus, there was a lot of bad beer out there.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's...
Yeah.
And knowledge has become so much more accessible.
Oh, it's so, yeah, it's so different.
I mean, the whole... The accessibility of even this radio show, you know, for example, and Brewing Network and all the other things.
All the other good people out there.
Like it's a sharing of knowledge, sharing of information, and like a rising tide floats all boats. And so we're all
absolutely
sharing it. And you know, a couple of weeks ago we had our microbiologist from Brooklyn Brewery talking about how, you know what, he actually used to work at Drew Bombard.
Right.
He used to work at New Belgium.
Yeah.
And they would, you know, always accept lab samples of everybody else.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And give them their opinion and feedback because it's in. Even though it was time on them, they weren't being paid by those other companies.
Right.
It was about raising quality.
Yes.
Because that helps everybody.
Everybody. And the better beer you have all around, it's the better it is for everybody.
Absolutely.
Because anytime you walk into a place as a guest, as a customer, and you have bad beer, you're going to tell five people. If you go in and have great beer, you might tell one.
Yeah.
All right, it's unfortunate that that's the balance, but that's what happens.
Yeah. And right. Another unfortunate thing, the biggest unfortunate thing, is that one bad beer people talk about more than they talk
absolutely.
About the good stuff.
They always remember the bad stuff.
That was the
it's
worst
the one
thing.
Rotten apple that spoils a whole pack.
Wow,
right?
To just come up with a Michael Jackson song, very good. Is that Michael Jackson? Yes, okay.
True, but we're now at a place where we have an amazing amount of American craft beers, and
yes.
American craft brewers are now kind of setting the standard.
They're
right?
setting the standard.
They have taken every style and are re.
Well, we met the guy from Israel, and they're looking to us for craft beer. Japan is looking to the United States. For
Belgian,
craft beer.
Belgian. Even Germany sometimes.
Even Germany sometimes. In fact, we did a collaboration with the Bovik Brewery in Belgium.
Oh, yeah? Who's we?
We, the BJ's Restaurants,
okay,
Inc. All right? And they first said, oh, this will never work. I mean, you're doing a Belgian IPA. I mean, there's too many hops in here. It's not going to work. My boss went over there. He brewed the first one, and he's, like, throwing in the hops. He's like, oh, this is going to be awful. And then, like, 3 weeks into it, it's like, oh, this isn't tasting bad.
Yeah.
2 months into it, it's like, this is pretty good.
All right.
A year after we made the first batch, they wanted the European rights to it. Okay. So, I mean, our style of doing things, our craft, is now the new set standard. We're no longer looking back to tradition.
Right.
All right? We're making tradition.
Yep.
And 100 years from now, people are going to go, well, the American craft brewing scene is what made beer today possible. When we're on the space station and the first guys go up there to make zero gravity beer, right? It's like, how do we filter out the yeast? Centrifuge.
As we've talked about over the few days or the last few days, I'm a musician first, and there's a book called Zen and the Art of Guitar Playing. Mm-hmm. I don't play guitar, but the philosophies in this book are really great. And the first paragraph of this is like, don't play to the styles that are already popular. Don't try and be culture and all that stuff. You're always gonna be quote unquote chasing the train.
Right.
Brew it. Or sorry, make the music that you play what you like.
The confusion's understandable.
Yeah, exactly. To me, there's a very very symbiotic relationship. Make what you want to make, make the music you want to make, and they will find you there. You're not the only one who thinks or has the palette that you have. I mean, palettes are like fingerprints,
absolutely.
And everybody's got one.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a lot of people that have ones that are similar to yours to go there.
That's why I don't get mad at anybody who says I don't like this beer that I might have made, because. If I made the beer that everybody liked, it would only be my beer.
Yep. Right.
Right? I want everybody's beer.
And I suspect it's likely that if they don't like one of your beers, they're going to like another.
Right? Absolutely. Absolutely.
Everybody has their kind of...
Sure. I've got my bailiwick. I'm not a real fan of northern, Berliner Weisses. Right? Just not a fan. I don't care how much syrup you put in there. I'm just not a fan. However... As a judge, as a BJCP judge like you are, I know how to appreciate it.
Yeah.
All right.
And that is something that's actually quite interesting.
Mm-hmm. That's something that's happening. That's something that's happening a lot now. Is that we have raised the bar.
Yeah, I agree.
Now that the bar is raised, we have to leave it up there.
Yeah.
Okay. And my problem with what's happening right now, two breweries opening a day, is. I know that people's palates have been raised. I know they're going to make pretty good beer. My fear is that they don't understand the business that it takes to run a brewery.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
All right? So...
Well, because you're not just pandering to that 2% that's writing all those reviews. You want to make the beers, first of all, that you love and that you excel in making.
Mm-hmm.
And that that everybody will drink.
Absolutely. So I mean, it's a balancing act that not everybody could do.
Yeah.
All right. And people ask me all the time. It's like, when are you going to open your brewery? It's like, never. I'm going to open a bar and sell really good beer that everybody else makes.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's an informed opinion and sense, which I totally appreciate. And
right.
Love.
I mean, I love making beer. I love brewing. I don't brew near as much as I used to. I mean, I used to brew every day. Now I brew like maybe 4 or 5 times a year. Just to remind myself why I don't do it anymore. It's a young man's job. I'm old. It's a young man's job. There are places I used to crawl into that I can't fit in anymore. Okay, so it's a young man's job, and
you're
leave it to the young guys.
My brewery, you wouldn't have been able to fit in.
Really, I mean, I'm not exactly Andre the Giant, but I'm a big mother.
Shut your mouth. I'm just talking about Michael Ferguson. Yeah, man. So, okay, with that, like you saw my brewery system. What's the smallest brewery that you've dealt with in your travels with Beer Geek TV?
Actually, I got to tell you, Two Barrels is about the smallest one.
Oh, yeah?
I think our smallest one before that was Three Barrels.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Right? And
where was that?
That was in Minnesota. No, Wisconsin, sorry. And we actually went to a candy maker and made candy. Made rock candy.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Your rock candy, baby. And we made the rock candy, but the brewery was a 3.5 barrel system. So basically, and then we have, for BJ's, we have a 3.5 barrel system, which is our R&D system. Yours is the 2 barrel system.
Yeah, and a makeshift one of that.
Yeah, that might be the smallest.
That's cool.
That's a great question. I'm glad you asked me that because that might be part of the voiceover.
What was the biggest system that you've done?
Oh my God!
You did Founders Odell
and Stones.
Yeah, Stones is. I might have to say, Sierra Nevada.
Oh yeah. Okay,
Stones is large.
Yeah.
And they got 2 Rolex, but the Huffmans up in at Sierra Nevada, all right, are gigantic,
yeah.
And the ones that New Belgium are gigantic.
Yeah,
so I mean, you're talking 200, 400 barrel systems. Yeah. I mean, these are big machines.
Is that on the brew side for a barrel system or a 400 barrel fermenter?
Right? Oh no, that's on the brew side.
The brew side, yeah.
Wow. No, we're talking brew.
The cool thing about Beer Geek TV is you guys have seen the spectrum. I mean, you've seen the biggest, the small, now the smallest.
Region. Yeah.
So this is kind
and then
of,
everything in between. So that's cool.
It's not just about the big names.
No,
it's to celebrate the craft brewing industry.
Yes.
Yeah. And the real roots of the craft brewing industry are places like Chris's.
Oh,
all right?
Geez.
I mean,
stop it.
No, really.
Stop it.
That's the roots. You're in there, you're making stuff, it's selling well, you're experimenting. I mean, that's what we do. We think outside the glass, right? And we're trying to put more and different varieties in front of the American public.
Yes.
That's what we do.
Yeah. And turning more people into craft beer.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
While also dropping science, man. I'm still so impressed that, you know, when it came time to, for the poignant point, like, you just fucking dropped it. I don't care that I said that. Welcome to Fermet About It.
Yeah.
But I mean, really, like, I wasn't sure that we were going to get that technical, and it was awesome. Like, that Beer Geek TV with you as the host is an awesome thing and educational, fun. And I'm not just saying this because I was a star in one of them.
Right.
And I'm totally a star. Like, it was awesome.
But let me say
Mary,
this.
You stole the show,
let me say this because a lot of people will eventually comment on this. Am I the best brewer out there? Absolutely not.
Is anyone the best brewer?
There is
no there is no
that's
best brewer.
That's what drives me nuts about these freaking lists.
I know.
That's all just like,
right. However, I'll put my passion against anybody's out there.
Yeah.
Right? And
passion.
That is the thing to me. That's what brought me into the industry. Not making money.
Yeah.
You know? I could have stayed an engineer for IBM if I wanted to make money. Right. You know, I fell into this. I backed into it. The bug bit me just like it bit you. And boom, here I am.
Yeah.
Here you are.
Yep. It's about the love.
It's about the love.
And you know where there's a lot of love? In a glass.
Yeah.
Thank you, Michael Ferguson.
Yes.
Thank you so much for joining us on Fermet
About
It.
Fermet About It. Thank you again so much. What's going on here? Oh, that's my fault. There we go. Woo, went straight into some other stuff on my computer. Could have been anything. Glad it wasn't offensive. Thanks for listening to Fermet About It. What the hell's going on? That's me crashing. And here we go. If you want to see Beer Geeks television, go to www.ora.tv. That's ora.tv/Beer Geeks. Thanks, Michael Ferguson. Thanks, David Page, the producer of that show. And thanks to the engineer of our show, Liz Smith. You're the best. And thank you, Jeff Lord, for joining us. Thank you, Dave Sharfstein, for joining us. Let's go have some Roberta's Pizza. Did I mention how good the pizza is here? Fermet About It over here.
for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.